You know how in the South Park movie Saddam Hussein had Satan as his bitch?
There was a South Park movie?
Yeah.
I really? You didn't know that?
No.
Oh, if only we had that. Were you rolling audio on that? I love that Ryan Bell didn't even know there was a South Park movie.
I could reproduce that. Don't worry.
This is happening. This is happening to you a lot, I guess, right? That exists? I didn't know that exists. What is fisting?
Yeah. People get naked in videos? What?
Premarital sex?
Wait, there's postmarital sex?
Let's roll it, man. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the award-winning Ardent Atheist, where reason reigns supreme. Not frogs and fish. Today's episode brought to you by billions of years of evolution. Sitting next to me is my co-host and producer, Heather Henderson.
Hi, everybody.
You know Heather from the Facebooks, on the inner tubes, and from our other hit podcast, Skeptically Yours. You can find links to our guest website, join our Twitter and Facebook feeds, subscribe to our premium ad-free 90-minute full-length episodes, and our email at ardentatheist.com.
If you'd like to take part in the live chat moderated by the author of the fabulous blog, Comedy Obscura, Joe Swam, go to ardentatheist.com/live and chat us up right now.
And please go to iTunes, subscribe to our podcast for free, and write a review. Help us get up there in the top 10 where we've never been.
Yeah.
You may also go to ardentatheist.com/premium and subscribe to our premium ad-free content for a measly $10 per year.
Subscribe now or God will strike you dead.
Our listeners do not believe in God.
They don't?
No, of course not.
What do they believe in?
Science.
Subscribe now or Bill Nye will strike you dead.
They also don't believe Bill Nye can kill anybody.
This logic crap is getting old.
Yeah, well, Neil deGrasse Tyson might put a scare into them.
Neil deGrasse Tyson can put a scare in me.
Okay, that seems really
important. We only have two rules on the show. Rule number one, guests may plug anything they want. We're not hypocrites. Go subscribe.
And rule number two, if your listener's ever been offended by anything, go to... get a sledgehammer and destroy your computer now. This show has no restrictions on language or content, and certainly, well, actually, it has something for you.
Neely Poo.
We're coming to you live from E&H Studios in sunny Studio City, California. In the Studio City tonight, we have... I love this. Matt Kirshen is here, ladies and gentlemen. Woo-hoo. We also have BJ Kramer. Woo-hoo. And former pastor Ryan Bell.
Hello.
Hello. Yeah.
You know these guys, well, really from showbiz.
Showbiz.
Even Pastor Bell is from showbiz, technically.
Showbiz.
Baby. You are a showbizzer.
Well, being a pastor is showbiz.
That's exactly what I'm getting at. That's exactly right.
I had a yearly stand-up thing. I mean, a weekly stand-up thing.
Yeah. Ba-da-ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da- All right.
Brought to you by Starbucks.
Because you don't want people to know your real name?
That's exactly right. I don't want them to know how Starbucks misspells my name.
Yep. Ryan walked in with this cup, and I just claimed it as my own.
Way to go, man. You are the man of the moment. We're at the end of the year.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll make it very clear. You've been spending 1 year living without God, living as if there is no God. And when you launched this at the beginning of 2014, the world kind of blew up, and you went through the whole process. I know that you've said in your blog that you've kind of landed somewhere. You've landed on something very specific.
Plymouth Rock.
And
ahoy.
We want to talk about that now because we are there. This is January. What is the date today? Anybody know? January 21st. Is that right?
You're past a year, aren't you?
Yeah.
It's a year and 2 weeks, I checked, since I was first on your show.
Okay.
Yay.
So here we are.
We got you first and we have you last.
Yeah.
All right. So you're going back to the money?
Where's the money?
It's in preaching, I thought.
You know, I mean, there's, for some people, that's true. I didn't ever strike the mother lode, as they say. I was a fairly modest preacher.
Right. Didn't push for the cash.
You didn't wear the $1,000 suits and drive the big cars.
No, I mean, I could never pull off that big showbiz kind of...
Gold jewelry.
Yeah.
Big rings.
I was never that much of a believer. You know, to be able to be an evangelist in that way.
No, see, that's the thing. You don't have to be a believer because you're the bling.
But I'm also a bad faker. That's the other thing.
Well, is that even an option? The big money preacher in your particular flavor of church? It's not, right?
Not really, because it is sort of a very narrow sect of Christianity. So there's not
Seventh-day Adventist.
Right? Yeah, it's not like mainstream Christianity.
All right.
So if I want to get into like big preaching, I should avoid that group.
Yes.
I think Baptist is sort of like the Walmart of evangelicalism.
You might
want to go that
way. What's wrong with Walmart?
They make some money.
Somebody's making some money, not the...
Really, it's the big black preachers that are making a killing right now.
I guess so.
Can you do that? Oh, can
Joel,
you do that, Matt?
Joel Osteen, he's not black.
Yeah.
The mega church, I thought the mega churches were all southern white people who pretend to cure people.
It's a mixture, Joel. Really.
Right.
It really is.
Benny Hinn. You could pull off Benny Hinn.
Is that...
That's the Asian guy.
Oh, okay. I thought you were doing a Benny Hill reference.
No.
He's a white guy.
He's white.
Oh, he... Really?
Yes.
That guy's not Asian?
What?
I'm looking him up right now.
Are you thinking of Benihana? Because that's a different thing again.
That's a restaurant.
Yeah, no, he's... He's a really tasty preacher. You guys
know what I'm talking about. Benny Hinn, where you go to the church and the chefs like flip the food into their hat and it's really entertaining.
Yeah. I like the stir-fry beef myself.
Yeah, I guess he isn't Asian.
No, not at all.
He wears a white suit, right? Or
he wears...
he's wearing pinstripes.
He's the one that slaps
people. Like he's never
been
on camera before, idiot.
He's the one that slaps people and they fall over and say thank you and give him money.
Yeah.
It's like a dominatrix.
But you were not this kind of guy.
No.
You were a company man, weren't you? For a lot of years.
What does that mean?
Look at you now. That was funny.
What does that mean?
Well, it's funny what you just did because, you know, I presume that when you started out as a preacher, you started with the Seventh-day Adventists, right?
I did, yep.
And, you know, the first time you stepped out on a pulpit and you started preaching the word, and this went on for many years. How many years were you a preacher?
19.
So for 19 years. But
could I check, by the way, were you raised Seventh-day Adventists as well?
Yeah, for the most part, since I was 5 or 6.
Right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So was the family grooming you to be a preacher?
Not exactly. I mean, they were super excited when I did decide to be a preacher.
Yeah.
But it wasn't sort of a pre-ordained kind of thing.
Right.
What age did you decide that you wanted to do that?
I was in high school, I think, but I started college as a math and astrophysics major.
Oh, my God. That's
right.
That's so fucking weird.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, yeah.
But I hated the lab because... I had taken AP chemistry in high school, and so when I got to college, the chem lab was just boring to me. It was all of these experiments that were, I already knew the outcome before I did the experiment, and I just was hours in the lab when my friends were having fun. And,
and what says knowing the outcome before you do the experiment more than religion?
I'm hearing this, and I'm thinking you were this close to like becoming a scientist, and one shitty teacher somewhere
right?
screwed you up onto the path of preacherdom.
Like, is there a moment you can go to where that that path diverged down the careening into religion?
I mean,
not really.
I was set up for it. I mean, because my family was very conservative Christian. Right. And I always had a kind of mystical sensibility about me. I always was interested in what I would today call philosophy, like the big questions, you know, where did we come from? Where are we going? That sort of thing.
Right.
And I turned to religion to answer those questions, whereas other people turned to science, other people turned to philosophy. I think my family set me up to go down the path of religion for those
indoctrination,
answers.
Baby.
Yeah. I have a question that everyone wants to know. As a preacher, did you get all the pussy?
No.
You must be reading right off the wall, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, the wall of reason. That's how they talk. Again, Seventh-day Adventist. It's just a different animal. I mean, if you're traveling around throwing up a tent and you're doing the evangelical thing, I think that's the world in which da pussy comes.
Da pussy.
I don't know. I mean, I hear stories about a lot of that kind of stuff, and It just that was not my bag.
Yeah.
So girls didn't come on to you because you were in charge?
Of course they did. Look at him.
I mean, maybe they did, and other times people would tell me that people were interested in me and I didn't even notice.
So how long before you did your year without religion, whatever, how long was that idea brewing before you went for it?
About a week.
Oh, really? But there must have been the germ of an idea beforehand.
No, actually, I had done a couple of, and I had described this on Ardent Atheist before, these sort of atheist worship services at my church around the time of Easter, around the time where we would celebrate the death of Jesus. And woo-hoo. So we would that was you guys who did that.
I wish I could take personal credit.
No,
unfortunately.
No, it was the Romans.
Romans, yes.
Romans.
Sure.
The Jews were just the informants.
That's right. They were accessory to murder.
We booked them.
We booked them.
We were the agents, and then
the Romans pulled the trigger, man.
Who books that now?
Yeah. The Romans were the trigger men. But
I can get you a good crucifixion, but listen, it's going to be a big one.
This is going to make your career. The exposure is going to be amazing.
The Jedi Smurf on the wall asks, what was the most surprising aspect of your journey?
Well, let me tailor that question a little bit.
Okay. All right.
You've been answering that question in broad strokes, really, and in really small sound bites, you know? I have a really, really... I want you to really explain the process that you went through through the year really well. And I know we're going to take the cameras. After the show, we're going to set up cameras, sit in the living room, and we're going to talk about this stuff too. So we'll do that over there as well. But to get to his question...
did you just go kind of cold turkey?
Yeah.
He really did.
But it wasn't...
That's what freaked out so many atheists, actually.
Because when I did, like, I'm just speaking personally, when I did my year without kickboxing...
your muscles just got so tight.
Yeah, it was just like, I mean, but it wasn't a big deal. I just stopped doing it.
How long was that idea brewing in you?
Well, I mean, technically I'd never really done kickboxing before or since.
Right.
So it wasn't a big change in my life. But this is a much bigger change because you were religious, whereas I was never actually a kickboxer, and so the kickboxing community didn't feel as snubbed. Maybe.
Lucky you.
You didn't have people in the community saying he's just turned away from kickboxing because Satan is in him.
And some people saying it's just a fad, and some people saying he was never a kickboxer at all. Accurate in my case. They were one saying he was never a kickboxer.
Never really a true kickboxer. Yeah. Just a pretend.
So talk about the journey of hanging out with atheists and living without God, and what was the hardest part? What was the, you know, let's hit the high notes and the low notes. Talk to me.
Right. So I was describing this to a friend just a minute ago. So I came up with another metaphor. One of the casualties of being a preacher for so long is that you tend to speak in metaphors, which can be useful. Actually, it's a perhaps a transferable skill.
Yeah, so, about as useful as spinning a cat in a dark alley.
I don't know.
That's all I could think of.
Yeah.
So I was actually brewing a kickboxing metaphor, but I couldn't make one work.
Didn't quite come up with it.
So,
I mean, I think for me, God was, and I, you know, radio is not the greatest for hand gestures, but, you know, God was a large entity in my life. Mm-hmm. And then as my life went along and I encountered more of the world, more different types of people, God was kind of shrunk to take up less space, you know, because reality filled up some other space, and God just kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller. The other way I've said that is that God was in the foreground of my life, and eventually God just began to recede into the horizon, where God was still there theoretically as someone who was the superintendent of all things, but not actively present in the world. So God was just an idea, a concept, an orienting point on the horizon. And so when I came to the end of December of last year, it was like I was at the precipice. I was at the edge of my faith, the closest I'd ever come to just giving it all up. And instead of just saying, you know, fuck it, I'm out, I give it all up, I decided to take the next step and extend that step over a year.
I see.
And stretch that last step to encompass an entire year.
That's a really powerful and compelling reversal of the way that many of the people in the atheist community saw it, you know?
Yeah.
The idea of you just throwing a switch and becoming atheist was kind of abhorrent to many people.
Sure it was. And now I can see, you know, when I chose the language that I put into that first blog post, I had no idea that there was an atheist community.
Yeah.
I didn't know there were podcasts. I didn't know there were conventions.
You didn't know there was a South Park movie.
I knew there was a South Park.
Yes, but no South Park movie. Before we started rolling on this podcast, BJ mentioned the South Park movie, and your reaction, Ryan, was, there's a South Park movie?
I had seen the Scientology episode and laughed my ass off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I knew that much. You know, the graphic that shows up at the bottom.
this is actually
what they believe. Yeah.
So yeah, I think become what's interesting about the year without God in retrospect is that I was becoming an atheist. I hadn't yet become an atheist. I wasn't still a Christian, but I was becoming an atheist.
So do you know, could you cast your mind back and think, like, at the moment that you announced it, when you wrote that blog post, did you have in mind what you thought you would be at the end of that year? Did you expect you would be an atheist, or did a bit of you think you would rediscover religion through that year?
Yeah, if I can be as, you know, go back to that moment as clearly as I possibly can and be as honest as possible, I would say I was probably 70% sure I would be an atheist.
Right.
And about 30%, like, you know, and that 30% was probably 20% hopeful. You know, 20% of that 30% was hoping I could become a Christian again or stay a Christian. Because as I said recently in one of these conversations I've had, I really liked the idea of there being a God. I really liked my faith. I wanted there to be this meta narrative that put all the pieces of the world together into a story that reaches that happily ever after. I mean, everybody, you know, we've grown up to love a story that starts and has a crisis and then ends happily ever after. Right. I mean, that's how our great childhood stories happen. And I wanted that to be true. I wanted my present life to matter in that ultimate sense.
Right. We're going to take a break. And when we get back, I want to hold you to the question that the guy on the wall asked, what surprised you the most? We'll make sure we answer that question as soon as we get back from the break. You're listening to Ardent Atheist at ardentatheist.com and available at the iTunes Store. More after this unavoidable interruption.
We've had a lot of people ask us about the comedy sketch clips that we play from the Vile comedy album Chaos Radio, so we are making it available to you. You can buy your favorite tracks from the 23-track record individually for $1, or you can buy the entire recording for $18. Go to gumroad.com/Emery Emery. That's G-U-M as in R-O-A-D.com /Emery Emery and buy the damn thing.
That's no way to... That doesn't help. They can't now... An atheist, a humanist, and an agnostic walk into a bar.
What are you doing?
Inviting our guests out for a drink.
You're an idiot.
Foundation Beyond Belief is a community of compassionate humanists and atheists supporting outstanding charities worldwide. Members sign up for automatic donations starting at $5 a month, then distribute those funds however they wish among the featured charities. To date, this unique humanist organization has raised over $750,000 to make this world a better, more humane place. We don't look to the skies for a better world. Foundation Beyond Belief is humanity at work. Learn more or join us at foundationbeyondbelief.org.
Hi, I'm David Diskin, and I wanted to tell you about Camp Quest West. We're a secular summer camp for non-religious families, and our week-long program for kids runs this summer in locations in California and over a dozen others throughout the U.S. At Camp Quest, we give kids the traditional camp experience like archery, swimming, arts and crafts, and campfire songs. But we add science, skepticism, humanism, and critical thinking. There's a few spots left for parents who want to register their kids, but we're also asking for your help. We turn every donation into camperships for families that can't afford to send their children to camp. We're 100% volunteer-based, a tax-exempt 501c3, and our amazing financial aid program is supported by the free thought and skeptic community by people like you. I want to see how much Emery and Heather's fans can raise for Camp Quest West. Visit tinyurl.com/ardentcampquest. Or look for the link on their Facebook page. You can learn more about our California camps and the others throughout the U.S. by visiting campquest.org.
And now back to Ardent Atheist Nonsense You Can Believe In. We're talking with former Pastor Ryan Bell, Matt Kirshen, and BJ the Kramer. Thanks, everybody, again,
the
for being
Kramer.
Here. The Kramer.
I try.
Yeah, he's the Kramer.
Kramer and Kramer.
Kramer versus Kramer?
That did happen.
It has been, yeah.
Oh, it happened to you too, didn't it? Thanks for being here. Kramer flew all the way in from New York. We're not going
to just to be on this podcast right now.
That's exactly right.
That's a lie. That's all right.
You are here. You're here with your kids. You're on vacation, right?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Just coming to L.A. to see my friends.
Awesome.
Do you know BJ's story?
Yeah, we met at TAM in July, and we actually had a conversation then about
your deconversion,
his apostasy from.
Did we shoot you for the? Did
yeah,
we
yeah,
set him
yeah,
down,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Good.
TAM is where friendships
There's
are made.
Some wounds, surface wounds here. Still.
Did you have a fairly sort of dramatic loss of faith as well?
It's funny. I was listening to former pastor Ryan describe this distancing. I forgot the exact words you used, and I was like, wow, that's really interesting and really different than my own experience. The God of Orthodox Jews is a stern, judgmental, distant authority figure.
Dickhead.
Yeah. Well,
dickhead.
That's
come
not,
on, you can say it.
That's not the word
asshole.
I was taught in Aramaic.
No, I hear you.
Well, technically, he's omnipresent, so all parts of him are in all places. So he's literally a dickhead.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, but my point about this was...
Thanks,
that it never felt you, there's no like personal connection to feel receding from. It's more like, you know, taking a pill in the Matrix and waking up and reality is fundamentally altered. It's just the facts of reality are now different. And it didn't happen quite as quick as taking a pill, but it wasn't a slow, long thing. It was, I don't want to think about this because if I think about it too much, I'm going to have an immediate contradiction between the reality as I can understand it, and the dogma I'm being taught. So I just
you wouldn't. Recognize the cognitive dissonance, and it started really eating at you.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, I started having problems in high school, but just I assumed that I was wrong. I came from the place of like, wow, that really doesn't make sense. I better find out why I have these crazy thoughts that can't have any possible value. So I'd go to the rabbis and like, it doesn't make in there. Don't think about that. Was kind of the answer I got. Like,
which is my sense of that is that's profoundly not Jewish.
It's profoundly not mainstream Jewish.
Yeah,
but it's right up alley of Orthodox Jews.
Well, because I was raised sort of vaguely conservative Jewish, but not very dogmatically.
One of my favorite stories from Matt is that his family actually eats off of. Paper plates.
Yeah, well, my family has a kosher home, would eat bacon outside of the house, but then takes it one step further, and they would order in, like, Chinese food or pizzas, and then eat it off paper plates, cover the table with newspaper to trick God. Like, that's the idea. Like, they're tricking.
And they buried silver.
That's the whole basis of Orthodox Judaism is tricking God. There are these loopholes everywhere.
Oh, it's amazingly and also the different strata of Judaism.
I feel like I need to defend Orthodox Judaism.
Go for it. Go.
Because that's not the case.
No, I mean that would definitely not be allowed. But the various stratas of Judaism from like the full like the Hasidim who have the curly sideburns on the hat and everything, and down to sort of the Reform and Liberal, and there's various different stages in between.
Right.
And each of them just seems to be delineated by at what point do you go, now that's nonsense. Like, that seems to be everyone, whatever level you are in Judaism, sort of thinks that the person one level up is crazy and the person one level up below is not a Jew.
This is exactly, yeah. I mean, in fact, the very first time I was on this show, Gary Shapiro sitting next to me said almost exactly that, you know, anywhere you are on the spectrum of Judaism, people to your right are crazy, people to your left, not even Jewish.
And as a child, I was brought up just believing that Judaism meant big meals and kids get to drink wine.
Well, that's every level.
They do have that.
That's actually the first seven of the Ten Commandments. I don't know if you knew that.
But Judaism does tend to be very inquisitive and very nitpicky.
So now I open this can of worms. I feel like I have to back it off.
Yeah, of course.
So to be clearer, I would bring questions to rabbis and they would give me answers. They're just really stupid, shitty answers. And I was expected to just swallow that.
Yeah, it's sort of logical.
Once I questioned, then it was like, don't question. You know, but yes. And further left in the religious spectrum in Judaism, yeah, you can have these conversations. But the way I was raised, you kind of can't.
There's a lovely story in Richard Feynman's autobiography where he talks about he was a student, he was a young physics student, and he was Jewish, but sort of in a fairly secular manner, and he was talking to an Orthodox person about why they couldn't use an elevator on the Sabbath. Mm-hmm. And the guy explained, well, when you press an electric button, it creates a spark, and a spark is a form of fire, and a fire is one of the prohibited forms of work on the Sabbath. And as a scientist, he went, well, why don't you put a condenser across the circuit?
Right.
Because that would stop a spark from forming. And he describes in the book how he thought, like, solved it. I've cracked it for all Jews, and now they can press buttons on the Sabbath.
Right.
And describes, like, not realizing how good rabbinic scholars are at the various
circumventing.
Yeah, exactly. The various
that's all you're really
doing. Like, he was like, he thought like ta-da, and instead it was yeah, but so we can't.
And he was like, someone figured out how to put a string around a town.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Well, the funny thing is about, and I think this is one of the things about being critical of other people's religion that you don't often do with your own, is I'm sitting here listening to this thinking, but the rabbis invented Judaism in the first place and then created the circumventing
right.
strategies.
Right.
And yet I would just a year or two ago have said differently about Christianity.
Right.
It's the
right.
one, it's like what John Loftus says about the outsider test of faith. Like, you have to subject your own faith to the same critique that you would subject any other faith. So as you're describing how crazy Mormonism is or how crazy Scientology is, and yet finding nothing odd at all about Christianity.
Yeah.
It's how
blood of Christ, all that
virgin birth, virgin resurrection. Birth.
Yeah,
but it's interesting to me because, like, the three of you certainly are people who were raised, who at one point would consider themselves very religious and had a fairly dramatic loss of faith. I had a much more gradual, like, I think when I was 10, I would have said I believe in God, and by the time I was 19, I would have said no, I'm an atheist. And somewhere in the middle, it slowly dripped away bit by bit. So I don't have that sense of loss. I'm wondering whether now, Ryan, you feel like do you feel like there's something missing, or do you feel like you've gained something, or is it a bit of both, or how has that made you feel?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. I mean, there's definitely a sense of a void. Like, there's a story that explains everything, and that story is gone. And it's gone in a way that when you look there now, you realize it was never there in the first place. It's a very, it's like waking up from a dream. You know, when you wake up from a scary.
You couldn't have been a real Christian then.
That's right. when you wake up from a frightening dream and you explain it to your friend, mm-hmm. and the moment as you're explaining it, it sounds absurd.
Happened to me this morning.
Yes.
But when
I spent
you
20
were...
minutes in bed trying to wake up from a dream where my car had slipped into the basement of some guy's house, but it was also underwater and I couldn't find it, and I was explaining it to her exactly the same.
And I had that nightmare about the bird getting in the house.
Oh my God, we're telling that story tonight right now. We'll come back to that in a minute. Well, we have to tell that story on the show.
But anyway, but just to finish the thought, basically, you know, the dream seems so real as you're having it.
Right.
And nobody could tell you that it's not happening. This car is flying through the cloud. You know, you're just having this crazy dream. And when you wake up, it's so obvious that it's not real.
What if atheism is a dream? What if agnosticism is a dream? What if humanism is a dream?
What if we're not really here right now talking into these microphones? What if this is? What if we're a brain in a vat? Did you think of that?
Yeah, no, I hadn't.
Matrix?
Me either.
I'm just going to look at my hand for the next hour, if that's all right.
Just to make sure you're actually here. Yeah.
Well, everybody got water. It does have ecstasy in it. So that's really awesome. What's going wrong here.
If I may just share my metaphor, parallel Ryan's. To me, it's like, you ever take Google Translate of something into some foreign language you don't know?
I've been doing it all week.
And then just for shits and giggles, you translate that back to English?
Yes.
Yes.
Then read that? You can understand basically what it's getting at, but there's like two layers of just like, eh, get that out of there.
Yeah.
That's exactly how I feel. When I look back at my religious life, like, there was an explanation I had. There was rules and organization and just an understanding of the universe, but it was clearly just this garbled mess obfuscating reality. And now it's all cleared away and things make much more sense.
But there is still something comforting in ritual and community. And I'm wondering, like, do you feel like you have anything that replaced that? Or do you feel like you'd like something that replaces that?
You know, I don't feel like I really want something to replace that. But what I think what's interesting about the way that I experienced Christianity in the last number of years when I was a pastor is that there was a kind of literary, metaphorical, narrative structure to my life. Mm-hmm. You know, like the seasons of the liturgical year, for example, there was a season of longing and there was a season of loss. There was a season of joy and resurrection. There was just kind of this life cycle. And I think a lot of secular people would look to just the natural cycle of like winter and spring and spring follows winter, and that.
You
kind
said
of
would, but do. I
do,
mean, you know this. You've
been
I do. In our community.
Yeah, I know. But I know that. But
I feel like I kind of agree. There is something, and I say this as someone who's not religious, but did have a vaguely religious upbringing. There is something nice about certain enforced states of the year, or even of the week. Like, there's something nice about the idea that one day a week you do not work. not because you feel like a day off, but you cannot have it. It's nice to have that as regimented. It's nice to have one day in the year where you reflect on everything you did and whether you did it good or bad.
The thing is that you can have that day off.
Well, that's it. I hope it's not too personal, but you were talking the other day about wanting to put your phone down and not have it for a week or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're talking about Burning Man. And you've also communicated to me the value of what's it called? Is it the whole day or the whole week? There's a time when you just turn your back on all communication that isn't just face-to-face.
In the Jewish religion?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, both the Sabbath and all of the main holidays are days when you're not meant to do what's designated work, which includes things like writing, carrying things, lighting a fire. Yeah, I don't plow on that day. Yeah.
And
you know what? That's one of the things that even now I no longer follow the religion. I still don't plow on the Sabbath.
Religiously, yeah.
And for the record, not kickboxing is not work, too.
No, exactly.
So you're always on the Sabbath for that one. Did you lose something like that when you went away from religion? Did you lose that? There's a peace of mind that comes for people in today's world when you don't have to pick up the phone and deal with stuff, when you don't have to answer emails and you just kind of spend time with yourself and or your family and loved ones. Did you lose that? Did you have that before?
You know, it's funny because I don't feel like I had much of that before.
Right.
I used to kid that, I was a very good Sabbath keeper right up until I became a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And then I worked every Sabbath as a preacher.
So that's your big day of the week, right?
Yeah, that's the big day of the week. And actually, as a Seventh-day Adventist, we observe the Jewish Sabbath. So it really actually was Friday night to Saturday night. And we talked about this, when we met in Vegas. And I would try to have everything finished by Friday night. But, my process of giving a public speech is that the hour or two right before, I go over everything and something about the intro or the conclusion strikes me.
Well, God couldn't fault you for that.
Right, because I was working for him.
Right.
Or her in this case.
Dog. You're working for dog.
Oh, man, I do believe in dog. I just got a new dog.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, he's so adorable.
We met him. We met him at the Steve Hills party.
That's right.
That was your dog at Steve Hills party.
Yeah, yeah.
I forgot about that. Yeah, he's darling.
Yeah.
Cool. I sound gay. All right, we'll be right back after this. Hold on. You're listening to Ardent Atheist at ardentatheist.com and available to the iTunes store. More after this insufferable disruption.
Good news, everyone.
That's right. Great news. We have a premium ad-free service. We already give you the hour of entertainment, but the premium service will allow you to subscribe to the full 90-minute show. It's only $10 per year. We also have another option. That's the Donate More If You Can button. If you'd like to give us more money, we will give away some subscriptions to the needy. We actually do. If you can't afford our subscriptions, send me an email. We'll hook you up. Some people give us more. We can do it. So be generous if you can afford it. Support the show. Please go to ardentatheist.com/premium and subscribe. How many agnostic atheists does it take to change a light bulb?
I don't know. How many agnostic atheists does it take to change a light bulb?
We can't know.
Foundation Beyond Belief is a community of compassionate humanists and atheists supporting outstanding charities worldwide. Members sign up for automatic donations starting at $5 a month, then distribute those funds however they wish among the featured charities. To date, this unique humanist organization has raised over $750,000 to make this world a better, more humane place. We don't look to the skies for a better world. Foundation Beyond Belief is humanity at work. Learn more or join us at foundationbeyondbelief.org.
Hi, I'm David Diskin, and I wanted to tell you about Camp Quest West. We're a secular summer camp for non-religious families, and our week-long program for kids runs this summer in locations in California and over a dozen others throughout the U.S. At Camp Quest, we give kids the traditional camp experience, like archery, swimming, arts and crafts, and campfire songs. But we add science, skepticism, humanism, and critical thinking. There's a few spots left for parents who want to register their kids, but we're also asking for your help. We turn every donation into camperships for families that can't afford to send their children to camp. We're 100% volunteer-based, a tax-exempt 501c3, and our amazing financial aid program is supported by the free thought and skeptic community by people like you. I want to see how much Emery and Heather's fans can raise for Camp Quest West. Visit tinyurl.com/ardentcampquest.
or look for the link on their Facebook page. You can learn more about our California camps and the others throughout the U.S. by visiting campquest.org.
And now, back to Ardent Atheists. Nonsense you can believe in. We're talking with former Pastor Ryan Bell, Matt Kirshen, and BJ Kramer.
The Kramer.
Technically not former pastor, actually, because we repasteurized you. with the Church of Bacon.
United Church of Bacon.
United Church of Bacon made him a pastor, an honorary pastor.
Prophet of defrocked pastors.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yep.
Is that right? Is that what it says on your... All
that's
right.
What it says.
Can you still marry people?
Yes, yeah. With that he can.
Could you still marry people before that happened?
Sure. I mean, it depends on the state.
Okay.
Every state or sometimes parts of states.
Yeah.
Like New York City has a different rule about...
I'm looking into it because... Yeah,
I did a marriage upstate. My last wedding was earlier this year, and I did it upstate. And there's upstate New York and any other place outside of the city, there are no restrictions whatsoever.
Do you ever get drunk and marry people as a prank?
No. I never got drunk.
You mean Seriously? You can drink?
No, most of my career
I'm sorry,
I didn't drink.
He worded it wrong. Have you ever gotten giddy on the blood of Christ? And... That's what he meant to say. So, real quickly, biggest surprise that was asked on the wall. What was the biggest surprise when you started all this?
You know, honestly, the biggest surprise was that it blew up the way it did. I mean,
You didn't think that would happen?
No, I mean, I wrote a blog. I mean, I bought a new URL, yearwithoutgod.com, and it was like me and a friend knew that it existed.
Yeah.
And if anybody's ever started a blog, you realize that you can write something and nobody knows it's out there because the internet is that kind of place. So I also have this little portal that I can access once in a while called Huffington Post.
Nice.
Little portal.
But I only ever got like maybe 1,000 likes or something like that on Huffington Post, and nothing ever blew up like that, and I had written 25, 30 blogs there. So I put it up there thinking, you know, that'll get a little traction and at least get my new URL, you know, out there. And within a day or two, it was, you know, CNN, BBC, Religion News Service, you.
Because I guess it has that hook both for religious people and non-religious people. Like, everyone's interested from their own angles and their own story.
You know, I can totally see why people would be skeptical about me doing this.
Yeah.
Because looking back, it was a little bit perfect,
yeah.
You know, in a way.
Right.
But I had no concept that there were any was a group of people that would take interest at all.
Right.
So how do you feel now you've done it?
It's very gratifying, you know, and the most gratifying thing is that there are thousands of people that are in this exact place, this in-between place.
They you're not the only one.
No.
No.
In fact, what's so compelling, you know, people say to me, like, what's so compelling about this? You're not the only person that's ever lost their faith. And I always say, exactly. What's so compelling about it is that I'm not the only person that's ever lost my faith. I just happen
to...
Wow,
that's some Jedi shit right there.
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
Whoa.
I'm going to look at my hand again for a bit.
So, yeah, it's sort of like if you were looking at life in full speed, like normal speed, and then you just slowed down this process.
Right.
And there's a bunch of people that can relate to that in-between experience, but people usually do that personally and privately. I had been living my religious life in public my entire life. I gave sermons once a week. I wrote blog posts on my church website. I blogged on Huffington Post about religion and politics.
This was a natural move for you.
Yeah, so for me to write about my loss of faith was the most normal thing I could imagine.
Right.
And it also, I mean, I think it was Hemingway who said, we write to know we're not alone. I mean, the reason that we write at all, or I you could extend writing into acting, filmmaking, whatever, is, or being a comedian. You know, when you make a joke and people laugh, you don't feel alone.
Right.
Right? Like, people are crazy like you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you suddenly have a community of people that are insane the same way you are. And I think that's why I wrote about it. I just wrote about it. And when you're a blogger, too, you don't have, unless you're famous, you don't have this sense that people are actually reading.
Yeah.
When you get this feedback from people, there's this wonderful moment when you think, oh, my goodness, there are people actually reading this.
Yeah.
This is remarkable. I never even imagined that anybody would actually read it. So that was what surprised me the most, I think.
Right. You have a new community now that you feel comfortable in, I presume. Is that accurate?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah?
Right here in this dining room, I feel.
We're so awesome.
You are awesome.
the communities that you've been spending the past year in, the people you've been hanging out with, that community, how does that differ? And I'm getting this off the wall of reason from somebody who asked. How does that differ from the, besides the fact that we have great senses of humor, how does that differ from the community that you knew before?
I think deep down it's not that different. I mean, it's people that are sharing their lives together, exploring the mysteries of the world together. We're going to go this weekend to hear Bill Nye together, a group of us. You know, that's the kind of thing that I would do with any group of friends. Like, hey, there's this cool speaker coming to town that's going to say funny and awesome things. Let's go listen.
Right.
And so I think that that sense of being with people in the everyday experience of life is what we all long for.
Right.
And so I think in that sense, it's the same. It's a little more irreverent, you know, I think that's fun. It took a little adjusting. I remember the first time a year and 2 weeks ago that I was here, you know, around these microphones the first time, and I felt a kind of culture shock.
Yeah.
And now that I'm here, I'm like, what was I culture shocked about? But it was just, you know, it was...
Well, let's paint the picture a little for the listener. I mean, you walked into a house, a hookah was going.
Yeah.
My walls are every different color, purple, blue...
Heather has Ardent
Red.
Atheist tattooed on her chest.
And at the time, I had probably a mohawk as well.
You had a mohawk.
And Heather was undressed, I think.
I was totally naked.
No. But you were taking a shower, I think.
Oh, right, was I?
As I arrived.
And was that your post or pre-sacrifice shower?
That was the during sacrifice shower.
Okay. Oh,
it's the only way to really keep the goat clean in the house.
Right.
So,
and Paul, you know, who was on the show that night? I can't remember.
Well, we had Todd Glass.
Todd Glass.
Yeah.
And he was in rare form. Like, he was just... like all there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Full energy. And I was sitting where BJ is right now, and I was just sort of like cowering almost. I was like, I don't know if I should say anything at all. I you know, people are going to tear me apart no matter what I say. I was just a little fearful.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't attacking your idea, right?
No, no, he wasn't attacking me. He was just expressing his opinion very forcefully, which is was fine.
Yeah.
And it probably wouldn't have seemed as forceful to me now as it did then.
Well, a lot of people confuse passion with anger or other
angry.
Emotions. Yeah. So,
but also it's Todd Glass in full flight.
Yeah, he's a force to be reckoned with. Yeah. Yeah, he's amazing.
And he fills the room. Like, he's a big personality.
Yes.
Right. So the effect that you've had on me is a little profound, actually.
Oh, I'd love to hear about that.
It's true.
He masturbates every night.
I'm an ardent atheist.
Down from twice a night, so it's good, right?
Right. Getting rid of that addiction.
Well, I gave it up for a year.
I don't believe you.
Yeah, well, he's skeptical. Wait. Find out who he gave it up to.
Oh, I will never be a comedian. I'm never... Yeah, it's like, no.
Let me tell you, Matt's got the punch.
I'm a comedian like I'm a musician. I know a good thing when I hear it.
Right.
But I'll never be the producer of it. I just...
Yeah. Matt's he's a good guy.
Being a straight man is okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So...
Sometimes.
When I called you, I definitely had a sense of what's this guy up to. We've talked about that before. Within 10 minutes of you being in my living room, I felt like you're really, really an honest person. You're really a forthright cat. You're saying the truth to me. I had that sense. And then over the year, hanging with you, getting to know you, and becoming really good friends with you, I realized I was right. You're just saying it like you feel it. There's Jamie Ian Swiss is one of the guys who just kind of lost his shit when he heard about this thing that you're doing. And he's one of the guys I respect the most in the skeptic world.
Yeah.
And he's a strong atheist, but not an activist about atheism. It's not his thing. He doesn't give a shit really about atheism in terms of activism. When your story broke in the Los Angeles Times, my phone just started filling up with messages from Jamie, which I'm not going
to. Oh my gosh!
I'm not going to quote Jamie. I am going to talk a little to you about what he said. I'm going to give you kind of a simplistic overview. Why in the fuck is this guy? He didn't say these words, but he
this
may
is
have
the attitude.
Well, why in the fuck?
This is the softened version.
Yeah,
yes.
It's the Reader's Digest version.
That was pretty funny, right?
That was.
Yeah. Why in the fuck is this guy who doesn't seem to know anything getting all these headlines. Mm-hmm. That's his. That's one of the places it hit him. Now, again, he's not an activist for atheism, so that doesn't bug. But I'll tell you what he is. He is the face, voice, mind, and in many ways, the genius behind the James Randi Organization's public persona. Mm. And so you getting all of this attention and saying these things that to him are foregone, obvious conclusions that you're wrestling with, it was pissing him off. He's like, why in the fuck does anybody give a shit about the guy that is confused about shit? Come talk to me when you fucking know something.
This pipsqueak over here.
Yeah, right. but that's the frustration Jamie was communicating to me, and frankly, in much kinder words. I'm really illustrating what I know of Jamie emotionally because I've hung out with him many times. So that's frustrating, and not just to Jamie. There are many other people out there who had that feeling, as I did initially. I had that feeling. So I want to talk about how that felt to you. In other words, were you aware? I know that we interviewed Jamie at TAM.
Right, we talked.
Yeah. So I want to talk about that when we get back from the break, but we'll get right on that. This is a short break. Don't go too far. You're listening to Ardent Atheist at ardentatheist.com and available at the iTunes Store. More after this intolerable intermission. And now, a special announcement.
This is a big super shout out to a few of our listeners. The whole world! Darlene, Adun, More Hamhead, Cinny, Will Imam, Sniffing the Dead Nun's Vagina, Scarlet Fields, Mark Nowitzki, Allah Anal Impalement, DRG, Muhammad, Holy Scriptures Cleans My Asshole, Ben Affleck, Liberal Dyke, SJW in a Prius, Paula, Ryan Magnan, Zingaman, Will, Finn Nicholas, Daniel Lucas, Raped by a Goat Demon, Deepak Smegma, Charlie Hebdalolila.
No, Charlie Hebdalolia. There you go.
Yeah, you say it three times fast. Choking on Tom Jones. Joel Hebdo, nice. Luck Guyver, Travis B., Kyle Delaney, Cameron Winters, and Joe Swan. I can't believe I got that one fucked up. Sorry, Joe. These were some of the people chatting on the Wall of Reason last week. God damn it. Thanks for being there, everybody.
Oh, that's all the people on there. They changed their name throughout the evening,
no,
too.
No, they don't. Really, those are all individual that's people.
And now back
show.
To Ardent Atheist. Nonsense you can believe in. We're talking with, technically, Pastor Ryan Bell, Matt Kirshen, and BJ Kramer, also possibly some sort of pastory guy.
Well, I am actually, I'm in the Church of Bacon as well.
Yep. United Church of Bacon.
Yeah, and I was a prophet.
Praise
but
Bacon.
I got upgraded to Messiah.
Yes! Yeah.
I love it.
I think
this is a real church, by the way. I want to be very clear. The United Church of Bacon, run by John Whiteside, is an actual church that does really, really good activism to try to fight for the separation of church and state. It's really a great, great, great...
They also perform marriages.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Can I circle back to something?
Yeah,
I wanted to comment on your question about community and the differences in the community you may have found. And there's one thing I don't know much about Seventh-day Adventists is how they're not particularly evangelical to outsiders, correct? They're not preaching and trying to make converts. So,
well,
are they?
Yeah.
They are.
It's a big evangelistic thing.
It is. Okay. Yeah, so, yeah.
Well, they do ads on TV, right?
No,
this is a message.
The Mormons had a bunch of good ads on TV, like well produced ads.
It was the Mormons. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to call you
that. The Mormons.
It's always.
Yeah, I've seen those.
The correct answer was the Mormons.
I was curious because the religion I came from does not at all. I mean, they outreach to unaffiliated Jews, but they don't even push that hard on those. And when I left and got myself a new community, it wasn't just friends of common beliefs. It was people of common cause. They were trying to affect change, which was nothing I ever personally was involved with. We had our thing. We did our thing. It was a little nuts, but we kept to ourselves for the most part. And now I'm meeting all these people, but I have to do something, and I probably am doing it wrong because I heard that a lot. No, you're doing it wrong. No matter what you're doing, skepticism, atheism, you're doing it wrong. You hear that a lot from a lot of people. And I found that hard to adjust at the beginning. These are my people, but they're very, very passionate about changing the world. Did you find that
off-putting?
Or is it easy transition because that's what background was anyway?
Yeah, for me, I had evolved into an Adventist that really didn't fit within Adventism anymore. I sort of grew out of Adventism, and I was a very liberal Christian by the time I left.
So you believe in evolution?
Yeah, right. But I was also an activist. I mean, my last pastoral ministry here in Hollywood, I actually spent quite a bit of time working in faith-based community organizing efforts. And so there was a common cause, you know, an effort to change the world and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the interesting irony about Seventh-day Adventists is because we have a Sabbath worship, and there was a historical fear that the American government would eventually take away our right to worship on the Sabbath and mm-hmm. enforce a Sunday observance. We developed very early on a robust religious liberty arm of the church. Hmm. So the church actually defends religious liberty around the country. The irony for me also was that when Prop 8 became an issue in California in 2008...
That's the gay marriage.
The gay marriage proposition, the prohibition that was then eventually overturned.
Yeah.
The Adventist Church in California endorsed Prop 8. Hmm. And that was one of my big moments where another chink in the armor, really, for me, was that I took on the Adventist Church publicly with a group of about five other friends of mine and said, the Adventist Church, regardless of what you think about same-sex marriage or just, you know, marriage equality, we should not be using a religiously specific argument to reduce the civil rights of somebody else.
Right.
Regardless of what you think about it or not, doesn't matter. I remember a case in Hialeah, Florida, when the Adventist lawyers helped defend the right of the Santeria religion to sacrifice animals in a residential area that wasn't zoned as a slaughterhouse, and the neighbors tried to use the zoning law to prohibit Santeria from doing their religious practice. And actually, they lost. The Santeria won because it was a religious practice.
That sucks.
And, you know, the Adventist Church helped them do that. We don't sacrifice
animals. They only won because they were only slaughtering gay
chickens.
Animals.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
gay chickens taste best.
I interrupted you.
Mine are a bit too feathery.
I want to bring us back to the Jamie thing.
As you were.
Thanks a lot. I want to know if you had a particular that shook you. I think. Am I wrong? Did that kind of freak you out?
You know, I'm used to people not believing that I was authentic in the beginning.
Yeah.
And I'm then also used to people sort of coming around once they get to know me.
Right.
Jamie is a person who is a little unique for me in that he didn't come around. Like, he still thinks I'm a jerk, which is fine. Like,
I want to be clear. He doesn't think you're a jerk.
He's annoyed.
He's absolutely annoyed that you're getting all of this press,
right?
And talking about these things in, like, he heard the NPR. I heard the NPR. He heard the NPR interview,
right?
From his perspective,
yeah.
I'm going to say this as accurately as I can, from a perspective I used to hold and really don't anymore, and that's where I'm coming to here. You know, you're really just talking about being kind of confused and not sure about things, and there's a kind of a wishy-washy quality in the word agnostic to guys like me,
right?
You know, and so
yeah.
What happened to me? And then I'll let you talk on both these. What happened to me was I realized you have the ability to reach and invite more people to reconsider this religious idea than I do, than Jamie does, than anybody does, really.
Well, it's brave to come out in public and do that, and you're standing up for what you believe in, and other people are seeing you do this. They're the flies on the wall watching you, going, you know, if he can do it, I can do it.
Right.
Yeah, I wonder how many people are because of you.
Yes.
I've had a dozen or so people tell me that they're beginning to talk to their friends and family about their beliefs or non-beliefs.
Right. We need more people like you doing what you're doing.
Well, yeah, thanks. I mean, it's funny because in reality, you know, I don't have any control over whether the media thinks this is a good story or not.
Like, right.
I'm just doing what I'm doing. Some people think I engineered this, you know, publicity thing. I would challenge anyone to engineer any kind of publicity thing.
Yeah.
I mean, even professional publicity people have a hard time getting people to go to their blockbuster movie, let alone, I mean, so I'm saying it.
You didn't send out a press release or anything.
No, it overestimates my abilities by a long shot to say that I could create this the way I did. And I so here's the thing. I had a person on Facebook say to me today, a kind of confession. I'm one of those that didn't believe you were sincere in the beginning, and I apologize. Yeah. And I wrote him back publicly on Facebook, and I said, don't apologize. You're being a good skeptic.
Yeah.
What good skeptics do is that they're skeptical, and they're committed to changing their mind when presented with reasonable evidence.
There you go.
And most skeptics that I know started out skeptical, believe it or not, yeah, of my intentions. And I, now that I understand skepticism, and I consider myself a new skeptic in that literal kind of particular sense, I applaud it. I would be skeptical too if a year from now some, you know, poser starts to say he's going to, you know, spend a year without God, whatever. Right. Whatever.
Right.
So I would be skeptical too, but I also want to remain open to new evidence as it's presented.
Sure.
And I think you're making an interesting point, which is that people find courage to explore their beliefs and stretch out into new undiscovered territory because someone else has gone before.
Right.
Well, there's strength in numbers. I mean,
yeah,
the more people who can come out and say it, the better.
Right.
So your cameras have been following you everywhere for a year. That's got to be weird and creepy. I'm working on the production as a producer, and the guys that are making it, Tim and Ryan, which is, you know, irritating. We have three Ryans in the room right now, thanks to.
I tried to get him to change his name, but he just wouldn't.
Yeah, no, I'm changing my name to Ryan.
Oh, sweet. Son of a bitch. Yeah.
I'm going to be Ryan for a year and see how it
goes. You see what I mean? Look at that. It's brilliant.
We've raised a lot of money for the finishing funds for the film. We're launching a Kickstarter program. Or is it? I'm sorry, an Indiegogo.
Indiegogo.
We're raising an Indiegogo fundraiser starting at, I think, when is it starting, Ryan? Monday? We're kicking it off Monday, but here you go.
Hi, my name is Tim Banks.
And I'm Ryan Moore.
And together we form the directing team that's behind the Year Without God documentary.
When we first started following Pastor Ryan Bell with our cameras back in January 2014, we had no idea how big the story would get.
Now as we turn off our cameras and focus ourselves towards the edit bay, we need your help.
We are turning to you, our friends and our followers, to help us raise the $25,000 needed to edit and complete this film.
During the course of the year, we were able to capture some very personal and profound moments that you're not going to see anywhere else. Trust us, you do not want to miss this.
So check out it all at the details below. And as a thank you for your continued support, we want to show you some never-before-seen content from the film, exclusive to our Indiegogo audience.
Thanks again for your support, and enjoy the sneak peek.
I've had people say to me in a variety of interview contexts, like, you are a pastor. How could you possibly be an atheist? And I said, precisely by being a pastor. Religion is like fire. It's dangerous. It could also be helpful, right? So, but it's not something to be taken lightly. It's a dangerous thing. Like, I'd really like there to be a God.
Right.
I'd like there to be some indication that the thing that I put all of my life into up till a year ago, I'd like to think that that was about something.
This has got to be insanely scary for him.
How often do they explore the question of whether, might I be wrong? Might I be wrong about this?
I think this conversation needs to happen without putting, like, these all or nothings, like, everybody's like this, and it just takes away from the conversation. Most people are in the middle. Most people don't know exactly what they believe.
So look for A Year Without God at Indiegogo if you'd like to help fund the finishing funds of this project. We've raised a lot of money. We need a little bit more to get through it all the way, and we haven't cornered you yet. We haven't asked you specifically. I presume that you've landed somewhere. I'm just asking. I'm going to ask you exactly what do you consider yourself to be at this point after the break. That's it, ladies and gentlemen, for the free hour. We'll be making the full 90 minutes available to our premium subscribers very soon. I want to thank everyone who wrote in. This is from last week. I want to thank my co-host Heather Henderson, our video switcher Ryan Magnon, And I want to thank all of my guests, ladies and gentlemen, for being here. Also, tune in next week when our guests will be...
Less Jewy.
And we'll be talking about...
The Jewy Nugget Center.
Yes. Matt, where can people find you online?
I'm Matt Kirshen on Twitter and Facebook at mattkirshen.com, and my podcast is called Probably Science.
There you
Please
go.
Do listen to Probably Science.
And where can people find you, Ryan?
Yearwithoutgod.com, and it's Twitter easy. Is at yearwithoutgod.
There you go. BJ, you don't want people finding you.
Yeah, come to TAM. Find me there.
There you go. If you want to find BJ, you got to go to TAM. It is going to be happening this year, apparently in July, so mark the date. This has been the free version of episode 163, another show that went off without a hitch. We miss you, Hitch. I'm your host, Emery Emery.
And I'm Heather Henderson. Our theme music, courtesy of the sound editor of The Aristocrats, Eric Wilson, and special thanks to our Wall of Reason moderator, Joseph Non-Believer Swam, and our digital publicist and web guru, Cameron Non-Believer Winters.
Oh, I get it. Some characters mentioned in this podcast are completely fictitious. Any resemblance to real persons living or dead is purely wishful thinking. You've been listening to Ardent Atheist. Ardent Atheist is a product of natural selection.